of the day of the disappearance of Shyamananda Prabhu. So, Om Ganat, Sundaranda Shah, Gananjana, Shalakaya, Chakshur, and Miditam, Yena, Tasmai, Shigurave Namaha. So, let's give a little bit of the disciplic history of Shyamananda Prabhu before we start talking about Shyamananda Prabhu's life. Shyamananda Prabhu was the disciple of a devotee named Sridhai Chaitanya, who was the disciple of another devotee named Gauridas Pandit. And Gauridas Pandit directly was a disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the story goes as follows, and Gauridas Pandit is also known in Krishna Lila as Subal, the coward boy. So the story is as follows, the history of Shyamananda's disciplic succession, is that once upon a time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was visiting his devotee, Gauridas Pandit. And he was visiting Gauridas Pandit, and Gauridas Pandit was serving him very, very nicely, nice prasad and everything for the Lord. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got ready to leave and go back to Mayapur. And Gauridas Pandit got very, very depressed when that happened. Of course, Lord Nityananda was also there at the same time. And he said, "You cannot leave." And he kept insisting, "You cannot leave, you cannot leave. I'm not going to let you leave." And Lord Chaitanya finally said, "All right, you can have deities of me and Lord Nityananda." And so basically, he posed for deities. Not while the, obviously, while the deities are being made, that takes a long time, but at least he went in front of the sculptor who carved the deities. In those days, the deities were carved out of nimwood. And the advantage of nimwood for deities is that the bugs don't eat nimwood. Nim is a natural antiseptic. It's a natural antiviral. It's a natural anti-bug thing. So if you're having trouble with bugs in your garden, you can spray nim oil or nim oil mixed with water all over the garden, and it's good on the skin. It's a good skin thing. Anyway, the nim is very, very purifying. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also appeared under a neem tree, and therefore he's called who? Nimai. That's really easy to understand. So they carved the deities out of nimwood, and the deities looked exactly the way Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda looked. And so Gauridas Pandit, he was very happy to take care of these deities. And then he had a disciple, and he initiated that disciple, Hridai Ananda. That was the name. That means he who has bliss in the heart. Hrit and Ananda, you know, blissful heart. It's like we have one devotee in our movement who's known Hridai Ananda. And it's interesting. Well, I'll tell you later the story about with interactions between him and Prabhupada with that particular name. So what happened is that Gauridas Pandit had to go somewhere for some preaching, and he said to his disciple, "You take care of the deities in the meantime." So his disciple, Hridai Ananda, said, "Yes, I'm going to take care of the deities in the meantime." But then it came very close to the festival of Gaur Purnima. And Gaur Purnima, of course, is a festival celebrating the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when it came very close, this Hridai Ananda became nervous. He said, "Well, there's what about the festival? We have to send out invitations. You want people to come to worship the deities." And so he sent out invitations without asking his guru, because the guru wasn't there. So he sent invitations to everybody in the neighborhood and all the great sadhus, saints, and great Vaishnavas. And then his guru came back. Gauridas Pandit came back. And he said, "How are things going?" And he said to his guru, "I sent invitations out." And his guru got very angry. He said, "You have done this without my permission, you impertinent, independent, rascal disciple." Those days, the gurus were a little heavier. Also in the beginning days of ISKCON, I mean, or after Prabhupada left, gurus were heavy too. So, or sannyasis even were heavier. Nowadays, everybody gets more mellow with age. So, he got very angry with his disciple, Of course, this is the test sometimes when the young brahmacharis go to the ashram of the guru, Brahmachari Gurukule Vasantanta Gurauritam, and they learn to work for the benefit of the spiritual master. And there's so many tests. Mahabharata talks about different tests the gurus give disciples. There was one disciple who was sent to make sure that the plants in the field were watered properly. So he was sent out to the field to make sure that that was happening. So there was a break in the ditch, the irrigation ditch. So the disciple tried to fix it, but he couldn't fix it. So he was thinking, actually, to carry out the order of my guru, I have to fix this. So he actually laid down in the ditch to plug the break. And so the guru was very pleased with him. So that was the test. And there was another story in the Mahabharata, really interesting story, about how one disciple was too fat. And the guru sent him out to take care of the cows. And he was out taking care of the cows, and he kept getting fatter. And the guru said, you know, what's happening? You know, you're supposed to getting some exercise out there, taking care of the cows. And the disciple said, well, I'm taking care of the cows, so I get a chance to milk them, and you know what? I drink the milk. And milk has nice milk fat in it. He said, and the guru said, that's not the system. Not supposed to do that. And so the milk is actually meant for the calves. And so then what happened is he said, okay, Gurudev, he accepted the guru's instructions, but the disciples still kept getting fat. And the guru said, why are you still getting fat? He said, well, I'm drinking the froth. The froth is like when the calves drink from the milk, there's a little froth coming. So he took the froth, and the guru said, all right, don't do that. The calves are just giving it to you out of their kindness, but you're neglecting the calves. Mm-hmm. And then he had some other ideas. You know, he still was getting fat. He had other ideas because he went begging, you know, for dakshin and for food. Because in those days when the brahmacharis would beg, it's not exactly money they would get. They would get foodstuffs. So then he kept getting fat because he was begging and eating what he was begging. And the guru said, no, you cannot eat anything without my permission. So finally, this poor disciple started losing weight. And he was so hungry, then he was out in the field. He was like, everything he looked at, I don't know if any of you have experienced this, but when you get hungry, anything you look at, you can eat, even a tree, you know, you think of like, chewing on the leaves or something. So he did that. He chewed on the leaves of this tree. And he became blind because it was poisonous. It was like yesterday we were walking in the field watching the potatoes, right? And the potatoes have nice leaves on the top. And I said, oh, can we eat them? And Lijana said, no, it's poisonous. I didn't know that before. The potato leaves are poisonous. So he ate and he became blind and he fell into a ditch. And so the guru said, you know, what happened with this disciple? They went looking for him, found him in the ditch, and they left him in the ditch. And the guru actually said, pray to the Ashwini Kumaras. They'll help you. Ashwini Kumaras are the twin physicians of the heavenly planets. So he prayed to the Ashwini Kumaras. The Ashwini Kumaras came. He was down the bottom of the ditch. And the Ashwini Kumaras said, please take this cake. This will cure your blindness. This is the medicine. But the disciple had learned his lesson so well, he said, I'm not going to eat anything without my guru's permission, even the medicine. Really determined disciple. And so the Ashwini Kumaras were pleased, and therefore he regained his sight. So anyway, so these are stories like that, some stories about that. So Hridai Ananda was chastised by his guru, Gauridas Pandit, and he was banished. Not only chastised, he said, get out of here, you rascal disciple. So, Hridayananda went to the bank of the Ganges, and it came time for Gaur Purnima. But because he had so much devotion for Gaur Natai, the deities that were Gauridas Pandit's deities, that were made in the image of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they left the altar, and they joined Gauridas Pandit's disciple, Hridayananda. And so Gauridas Pandit got ready. It was time for the greeting the deities in the morning, to open the curtains, and there were no deities there. It would be like you know, count 7:15 here, you open the curtains, and Gordon and Ty aren't there anymore. What would you do? And they just, like, left with some sannyasi. You know, you saw them walking down the street, you know. So Gauri Das Pandit got very angry because he had this intimate relationship. He was coward boy, Subal. So he got very angry with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and went chasing after them with a stick. He went to the bank of the Ganges and he saw his disciple with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and they were dancing. And he was so angry, and Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda were so much afraid of their disciple that they jumped into the heart of this Hridayananda. And Hridayananda later became Hriday Chaitanya. That means he who has Chaitanya in the heart. That's a nice story. And then, so just something about ISKCON, like Prabhupada gave one of my godbrothers the name Hridayananda, Hridayananda Maharaj. And sometimes Prabhupada would call him Hriday Chaitanya, which is really interesting. Because Prabhupada, of course, knew this story, this particular story. So that's the disciplic history of Shyamananda. So Shyamananda himself was born in a place called Utkala, which is in modern-day Orissa. Now, Orissa was actually far larger than it is nowadays. Orissa went all the way south to Chennai, and all the way north, practically to Calcutta. So it was connected with Bengal. It still is, but it was far closer to Calcutta and Mayapur than it is today. So he was born in Utkala, and he was given the name Dukhi. Dukhi means like very unhappy person. Like Dukkha is unhappiness, Dukhi is the unhappy person. Like you have Sukha, Sukhi, or even the word yoga and yogi. Yoga is the process, yogi is the person, right? So he's called Dukhi, unhappy, because he had no brothers and sisters, they all died. And from his very birth, he had the signs of what we call a Mahapurush. A Mahapurush is someone who is a great personality. Purush means person, sometimes means male. Maha means big, great. And so certain signs that are there, like eyes that extend to almost the ears like lotus petals. You see that sometimes with the deities, almost like that, isn't it? None of you have eyes like that. You all have round eyes, including me too, I mean, obviously. And hands that go down to the knees when you're standing up. None of us have hands that long, right? Our hands go to our waist, usually. Not much further. So, maybe a little. But not down to the knees. So you see sometimes people with long hands, like long arms like that. So there's different proportions in the body. You know, something's big, something's small. This is practically in every Vaishnava literature, you'll find mentioned the proportions of the body of these great personalities. I mean, all the details, like the nails, the private parts, the ears, the eyes, the mouth, the nose, everything is mentioned as far as the great aspects of the personality, like Krishna. In the Ramayana that I'm hearing, that also it's mentioned like that too, the proportions of Lord Ramchandra, of his transcendental body. So he had all the signs. That's a sign of a great personality. And, you know, the skin color, all those things like that. Like Prabhupada, for example, had many of the signs of Mahapurush. Prabhupada was actually golden-skinned. Yeah, any of us, there's no Prabhupada disciples in the room, but if you've ever been with Prabhupada, he glowed gold. And even where Prabhupada, I remember the first time I met Prabhupada, 1971, and where Prabhupada sat on the Vyasasan, the footmarks were glowing gold. The marks that Prabhupada made with his feet on the Vyasasan. So it was, and I saw Prabhupada. Actually, the first day I saw Prabhupada, I was in his room, went to his room, and he was just dressed in a gamsa. So you saw his whole transcendental body, practically speaking, it was all golden. He was just an amazing person. Of course, there's a story that when Prabhupada was in New York in the early days, people would look and say, he is glowing. Right? You all know that story, that man is glowing, like effulgence. So Prabhupada was effulgent. So these are some of the symptoms of Mahapurusha. So his father asked him when he was a little boy, he said, you know, who is your guru? And he immediately knew who his guru was, because these are all eternal relationships. In other words, he comes down, these are Nichisita devotees who have eternal relationships, because obviously they know, or even if they forget it, Yogamaya, but their connections are eternal. So he said, my guru is Hriday Chaitanya. Hmm. And I want to go see him. Hmm. So his father was thinking, you're just a young kid. You can't go to see Hriday Chaitanya right now. You have to wait. So finally he convinced his father to go to see Hriday Chaitanya. And he arrived, and Hriday Chaitanya asked him, who are you? And he said, my name is Dukhi, and I'm born in the family of the six Gopals. What that means is that he was also a seminal descendant of some of the cowherd boy incarnations who appeared with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's a, you know, the Gopals. There's Dwadasha Gopals. Does anyone know what the word Dwadasha means? It's a number. What number is it? 12. 12. Like right before Dwadasha comes what? Ekadasha. Or Ekadashi is the day. Ekadasha is the number. Got it? So there's 12 main, this is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's 12 main, like Gopals or coward boys who are associated with Lord Nityananda. That's, that you should know from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he began to serve Hriday Chaitanya very, very nicely, and Hriday Chaitanya gave him the name of Krishnadas. So he became Dukhi Krishnadas, was his name at that particular point. And as he began to serve Hriday Chaitanya, Hriday Chaitanya recognized that he was a very learned personality, and he was thinking, this learned personality should study under the most learned personality, who was Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan. So he sent him to study, as to accept siksha under Srila Jiva Goswami. And when he was studying with Srila Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan, he associated with Srinivas Acharya and Narottama Das Thakur. These three are considered, you know, great, inseparable friends, the three great personalities. So they were studying, and he asked Srila Jiva Goswami for some service, because without service, one's studies are fruitless. Like the question was asked yesterday about how do you get some realization? And Bhagavad Gita answers that question, isn't it? Does anyone know the verse? Tadvidi. Paripratena, Pariprasneva, Sevayad. There's that word. Just approach a spiritual master, inquire submissively, and render service. Because inquiry comes first before service, because you got to ask, what service? If you just do what you want, that's not service. That's just what you want to do. That may be a gyata sukriti, but it's not service. Actual bhakti begins from the point where you do what Krishna wants rather than you do what you want for Krishna. There's a difference. Sometimes in the beginning stage we dovetail. What I want to do for Krishna, that's what I'll do. Or like Prabhupada said, whatever you're doing before you join the movement, you should continue doing for Krishna. But actual surrender is sarvadharma puritshasha. You know, just do what Krishna wants. That's bhakti. Anyabhi lashita shunyam jnanakarvada abhatam Anukul yena krishnanu shevanam bhaktirutamam. That's so. Anyway, so he asked Jiva Goswami, what should I do? I want some, like, personal service. So he was given the service of two services of cleansing this Kanaka Kunja every day, and at the same time bringing water from the Kanaka Kunja to Jiva Goswami. And this Kanaka Kunja is a kunj in which Radha and Krishna enact their pastimes. There's many different places, kunja. Kunja means like a forest, basically. Like Radha and Krishna, we chant every morning, Kunji Bihari, right? They're enjoying in the kunjas in the forest. And not exactly jungle. It's interesting. When Prabhupada came first to New Vrindavan, he said, this is a jungle. Jungle means a deep forest. You understand? But the Vrindavan is not like a deep forest. It's like his bushes and creepers and everything like that. When Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, it was far more green than it is today. Today it's more like a desert in many different places. So he was given that service of cleansing. And he would go to the well every day and take water for Srila Jiva Goswami. And one day, there's different versions of the story. Some people say that he found this ankle bell of Radharani in the water of the well. And other people say that he found it in the bushes or under a tree or something like that. But in any case, he found an ankle bell. And this ankle bell, also he had observed every day when he came to the Kunja, there are some very beautiful girls coming and, you know, drawing water from the well there. So he was just wondering, who are these beautiful girls? And so, and then he found this ankle bell. The ankle bell was glowing. And he thought, this must be something special, like the ankle bell of Radharani or Gopi or something like that. And it was glowing. He fell unconscious when he touched it. And eventually he buried it in the ground just to keep it safe. And the shovel or the implement that he utilized to bury it in the ground turned golden just by touching this nupura or the ankle bell. So then Radharani, who had lost this nupura or ankle bell, sent one of her associates to try to get it back. Two versions of the story. One version is Lalita was sent. Another version was Vishakha was sent. I mean, you hear all these different versions of the story. It actually happened, but sometimes the story changes in small details like that. That's why you hear different versions of the same story. You understand? Because it's an oral tradition. And actually, a lot of this information is contained in the book called the Bhakti Ratnakara by Narahari Chakrabarti. Anyone's heard of that book before? Bhakti Ratnakara, a very important book. And it gives the essence of the Siddhanta. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur commented that there is a lot of detailed errors in the book. But the Siddhanta is perfect, therefore we appreciate it. So that's the important thing, is the Siddhanta. Siddhanta means the conclusion, the perfect conclusion. Siddha means perfect, and anta means the end. Like Vedanta, you know, the conclusion of the Vedas or the end of the Vedas. And Siddha means the perfection or the conclusion. Siddhanta. So the perfection and conclusion of the perfection. So anyway, so this, most of these stories come from the Bhakti Ratnakara. And also from some of the writings of different acharyas, like there was one, Nityananda Das, who was a disciple of Janavamata. So he also wrote a lot about these particular pastimes. So he found this in Vishakha, or Lalita came, depending on which version of the story you're talking about. And they said, one of my friends has lost an ankle bell. You know, she was coming here to the Kunja, taking some water. And so, have you found it? And he said, who are you? Because he could see that she was an extremely beautiful girl, more beautiful than anybody he'd seen before. And she said, I'm just a village girl, and the person who lost it is a village girl, too. And eventually, he said, I want to see her. And so eventually it was revealed that you cannot see her in your present body. So please take a bath in this well here in the water, in the Sarovara. Take a bath in the water. So he took a bath in the water, and then he came out as a beautiful gopi. It's nice, isn't it? Just like the story we were telling last night, how Narada Muni took a bath in the Kushama Sarovar and he came out as Naradi, the gopi. One time I was giving an initiation and I gave a girl the name Naradi. And she became very angry. She said, why are you calling me Narada Muni? And I had to explain the whole story to her because she thought I was insulting her. You know, imagine giving a girl the name Narada Muni. So he became a beautiful girl, saw Srimati Radharani, and he fainted in ecstasy, and he requested a boon. He said, I want to be your eternal servant, life after life, and serve Radha and Krishna. And then he was given a mantra by which, if he chanted, he could see Radha and Krishna at any time. We are also given a mantra, right? What's it called? The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You can see Radha and Krishna at any time if you chant purely. It's just like if you have the right mood when you're talking to someone, they'll reveal themselves to you. But if you don't have the right mood, they're not going to show themselves. Like if you call someone up on the phone and you have the wrong mood and you say, can I speak to you? What will they do? Hang up the phone, right? Of course, the people don't hang up phones. They press buttons now. That's the old days. They would hang phones, right? You remember when they had phones, telephones like that? So they press, and then they put you on the no-call list, too. You have that here in Denmark? That you block the person. So because we don't have the right mood with Krishna, Krishna's put us on the no-call list. You know, so he doesn't answer our phone calls anymore. But if you have the right mood, Krishna will listen. So anyway, so he got this mantra, and then he gave Radharani back the nupura, the ankle bell, and she took the nupura and put some kumkum on it. And there's several versions of the story. Some say that Radharani touched it to his head, Duki Krishna Das's head, and other people say that Lalita touched it to his head. So in any case, he got a touch to his head, and he got new tilak, which is like reddish tilak with a dot in the middle. And he was given a new name, too. Radharani gave him the name Shyamananda. He's the bliss of Krishna, Shama. Like Krishna is Shama Sundara, the beautiful. Shama means the color of Krishna. You understand? Shyamananda. So in Krishna is called Sham. And just like in Vrindavan, you hear all the time, Radhe Sham, Radhe Sham. Sham, Sham, Radhe Sham, right? That's on Sham, Sham, oh yeah, Radhe Radhe, Sham Milade, they chanted. Anyone's heard that? No. And then you have to respond, Sham Milade, Radhe Radhe, and you go back and forth like that. If you ever go to Vrindavan, people, you do that, people will be very impressed. Because even the kids are going, Radhe Radhe, Sham Milade, and you have to go, Sham Milade, Radhe Radhe, you know, the response back and forth. And it's really cute. When you do that. So, Shyamananda, he was given the name Shyamananda. And Radharani said, don't tell anybody except for Jiva Goswami. So he cried, fainted, and returned to Jiva Goswami. And at that time, of course, he returned to his male form. But he had a golden complexion. His complexion changed to the color of molten gold. And Jiva Goswami asked, where did you get that tilak? Where did you get that color? You know, what happened to you? And Shyamananda answered, it is by your mercy. And then he explained the whole story. Jiva Goswami asked to see the shovel which was utilized to bury the nupura, or the ankle bell. And he showed it to Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami basically said, now I become your property. You know, respecting Shyamananda's great position. It is by the, you should always remember, it is by the mercy of your spiritual master that you have achieved this position, Hriday Chaitanya. But Hriday Chaitanya didn't believe that. So the Vaishnavas, at that point, they started making a rumor that Hriday Chaitanya's disciple, Duki Krishnadas, had taken reinitiation. Now, it is actually a great offense to take reinitiation when your guru is still in good spiritual condition. I mean, if guru has fallen, there's some writing by Narahari Sarakar and others that, yes, at a certain time when it's understood he's irretrievably fallen, then you could take reinitiation. But if your guru is still functioning as a Vaishnava, not smoking marijuana or anything like that, then reinitiation is prohibited. And sometimes you see people come from different organizations. I don't know if you have that happen here in Denmark, but in other places, people come from different organizations and say, you know, we have a better guru than your guru. And he'll give you reinitiation. You go to see him, and he says, hello, shakes your hand, your new name is whatever. You're Radharani Das or something. And you get bewildered by the whole thing. But that's offensive. Anyway, so they thought that he had committed this, Duki Krishnadas, who is now Shyamananda, they thought he had committed a great offense against the spiritual master. So they conveyed this information to Hriday Chaitanya. Hriday Chaitanya got very angry, sent the devotees to Braj to see what had actually happened. And they asked Jiva Goswami, you know, why does he have this name? Did you give him reinitiation? And Jiva Goswami said, no. This Tilaka name was given to Hriday, by Hriday Chaitanya in a dream to Shyamananda. Shyamananda said, yes, it was a dream. My Gurudev gave me all this. And so the devotees went back to Bengal and told Hriday Chaitanya. And Hriday Chaitanya said, I don't remember that dream. And sometimes that's a common experience that we have with disciples, is that disciples will say, I had a dream of you yesterday or, you know, last week. And I'll say, what did I do in the dream? And I don't know anything about the dream. Anyway, sometimes it's Krishna arranging things. But, you know, sometimes they'll say, you said this. And I said, I said that? I didn't say that. You can't take dreams so seriously. Even when Prabhupada passed away, there was one devotee who was having dreams about Prabhupada and telling things that he thought Prabhupada was saying that contradicted everything the GBC was saying. And we used to joke about that, saying that he was channeling Prabhupada. You know what channeling is? Channeling is when you have like a psychic who channels people who have left this planet or something like that. So dreams can't always be taken so seriously. Like Prabhupada said, we see different things in this lifetime. Like we see gold and we see a mountain and we put them together and we dream about a gold mountain. But, you know, there's not many gold mountains around. But you put things together in different ways. I mean, we all have these wild dreams at night, so don't take them so seriously. So Hriday Chaitanya got angry, and then he went himself to Vrindavan, and he inquired from Shyamananda, who was your guru? And Shyamananda said, you are my guru, and this name in Tilak is there by your mercy. Hriday Chaitanya got really angry and he said, we're going to test this. I'm going to wipe this Tilak off, and the name is written on his body too. And if it remains, then we can understand it is real. But if it goes away, then you're simply a rascal. It was a very heavy encounter. So Shyamananda became so upset at that time, he chanted this mantra he had learned from Radharani and went into trance. And he went into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and he was outside of Radharani's house at that particular time. And he was crying. And his spiritual name was Kanaka Manjari. That's the spiritual form he had within Braj Leela. So the gopis saw him and they asked, why are you crying? It was her at this point, not him, of course. And why are you crying? And she said, my husband is beating me. Husband, you know, Swami in Sanskrit, Swami can mean husband also. It means Lord, basically. Like in the traditional sense, like we were talking about how husbands and wives call each other last night, that the wife would call the husband Swami, never by the name. It was always Swami, or Pati Dev, or Pati Guru, like that. Great reverence. Nowadays, of course, they don't observe this anymore. So she, who was also he, said that my husband is beating me. So they brought him in to see Srimati Radharani. Radharani was eating betel nuts. And Rupa Manjari was massaging Radharani's legs, and Lalita was preparing the betel nuts. And Champaka Lata was fanning Srimati Radharani. So they explained this story, And Radha spoke to Subal, who was the grand spiritual master. Remember I said Goridas Pandit? He was the grand spiritual master of Hriday Chaitanya. So it's interesting how you have the whole disciplic succession there. And she said, you got to help him. So Subal painted Shyamananda on Shyamananda's chest, who was Kanaka Mundri at that particular time, and as well as put the tilak again on his forehead. And he came out of his external consciousness. And he was crying. Jiva Goswami understood what had happened. So his guru, Hriday Chaitanya, tried to wipe off the tilak and the name, and it kept reappearing. So Hriday Chaitanya got a little bewildered at that point. You know, huh? What's happening here? Then later on, he just still didn't accept it. A few days later, he actually beat his disciple physically. He said, you're very unchaste because you're not in the same bhava as me. You know, the same rasa. You don't have the same... Bhava means emotion. Rasa means the taste from a relationship. Rasa doesn't mean relationship. It means the taste that one has in a relationship. So you don't have the same taste. So, Shyamananda, at that point, explained, yes, I'm chaste because... Subal, who is Goridas Pandit, is your guru, and he assists Radharani in the conjugal loving affairs of, between Radha and Krishna. And so Hriday Chaitanya kept beating Shyamananda with a stick, you know. Then, that night, Lord Chaitanya appeared in a dream before Hriday Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was all bloody. And he said, why have you been beating me? You've been beating my great devotee. And so at that point, Hriday Chaitanya understood the truth. He apologized to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said, as a punishment, you should have 12 festivals, you know, sponsor 12 festivals. In the meantime, Shyamananda was ordered to preach in Orissa with this devotee, Rasika, or Rasikananda. So all over Orissa, Krishna consciousness became spread as Shyamananda and Rasikananda preach together the glories of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the samadhis of Shyamananda and Rasikananda are there at the Shirachora Gopinath temple in Ramuna. Anyone here been to Ramuna? No devotees. You've been to Ramuna. So Ramuna is a very beautiful place. It's about 2 hours away from Jagannath Puri on the main road. You haven't been there? Okay. It's in Orissa. And it's you head south from Calcutta, because we've gone by road, not by train. You head south from Calcutta and you go there. And Ramuna is where the Shirachora Gopinath deity is. That Shirachora Gopinath deity is a deity that was carved directly by Lord Ramchandra. The Lord made a deity of himself. Because when Lord Ramchandra was in Ramuna, Sita Devi asked him, what do you look like in Dwarpa Yuga? And Lord Ramchandra took out his arrow and he carved a deity on stone. And it's a relief deity, not a freestanding deity. You understand the difference? Like your freestanding deity is like Gordatai here. Relief deity is like if you have a panel and it comes out of the panel. And so there's Radha and Krishna, I mean, just Krishna deity, I'm sorry. Just Krishna deity, and they dress him every day. And that's the deity that's offered the condensed milk, the kheer, which we call sweet rice, which the deity stole to give to Madhavendra Puri. And it's a very wonderful place. Like, if you take one container of kheer or sweet rice, it's enough to satisfy you for the whole day. It's like heavenly nectar. It's unbelievable. They keep the cows that produce the milk from which the kheer is made. The cows are actually living connected to the deity room. So it's not an open connection, but they share the same wall. It's like this: if this was the deity room, then right behind this wall would be the cows. So the cows and the deities are practically right together. And then right behind there, the samadhis of Shyamananda and Rasikananda. One samadhi is right behind the cows, and the other is about 100 meters away down the road. So these are the samadhis. And then they passed away after preaching Krishna consciousness all over Orissa. So today is the disappearance day of Shyamananda. So any questions or comments? Yeah. Well, they forget because of Yogamaya. Yogamaya. I mean, Krishna, of course, does say in the Gita, many, many lives both you and I have passed. You know, you could, I can remember all of them. You can't, and probably explains because of change of bodies. But you know, esoterically, really, it's because there's Yogamaya there.
But often they keep the mood still?
They keep the same mood, yeah. Oh, the mood is there. The bhava is there. Or just like if someone in this world has amnesia, they're still the same person. They have the same mood. It's not that they become a rakshasa just because they forgot something. So it's, yeah, the bhava is still there, and it develops more and more as they go through their lifetime, but it's not necessarily true that they remember. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. But it's not necessarily true that they remember who they are in the spiritual world. Because it's Yogamaya. Yogamaya enhances the pastimes. Without forgetfulness, there's no drama. In other words, if Shyamananda realized he was Kanaka Manjari, even when he was a little boy, I mean, there wouldn't be that drama of meeting a spiritual master and taking initiation. You know, he just said, I'm Kanaka Manjari, you know, like that. So you gotta have some, or, you know, if Arjuna remembered everything instead of getting bewildered, thinking he was connected to a particular family, you wouldn't have had the Bhagavad Gita being spoken. Right? I mean, Arjuna didn't want to kill his guru. He didn't, you know, he was fearful. Prabhupada even said fearful. Fearful not for his own safety, but for his extended bodily safety. Just like we're fearful if one of our relatives is going to be hurt or they get sick or something like that, we become very fearful. So Arjuna was experiencing that fearfulness. But that's Yogamaya. That's Yogamaya because of attachment. It appears to be like Mahamaya, but for a pure devotee, it's Yogamaya. Does that make sense? So, yes, we've done.
You have something about revealing previous identities. Am I right that actually it's not something that Baba is open for in our present day? Or is it possible that, you know, for example, Baba's identity would be revealed?
Oh, Prabhupada told us not to delve into that matter. Like many times people would ask Prabhupada like intimate questions and Prabhupada said that question is not for you to ask. So to speculate upon the identity, unless the guru tells that, like Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, he actually told what his identity was in the spiritual world. Same thing with Bhakti Vinod Thakur. If that's the case, then you can say that with reasonable certainty. But for someone who doesn't reveal their identity, it's not our business. It's really not our business. I mean, I know after Prabhupada left the planet, devotees were speculating. Was Prabhupada a coward boy? Even some people from the Gaudiya Math would say, oh, he's a coward boy. Other people would say he's a gopi. You know, like, that's, we should not go into that realm of speculation. And now, another thing is devotees always want to find out who they were in their previous lives. Yeah, and so I just generally tell them, you're probably a monkey or a or a dog or something like that, and you just happen to eat some mahaprasad and someone threw outside. Because we all think we're great, because of our pride, we think we're great personalities. I remember one devotee kept insisting to me that she came to Krishna consciousness because she actually was, you know, advanced spiritually before, whatever. And I said, no, you came because of Prabhupada's mercy. She said, that's there too, but, you know, I was advanced. So we should be thinking, even if we were advanced in the past, we should be thinking it is by the mercy of His divine grace to the Prabhupada we're here. Brahmanda Brahmatai Konna Bhagavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasadikai Bhakti Lata Beach. They were wandering around all the universe, and by the mercy of Krishna and the mercy of Guru, we get this Bhakti Lata Beach. And that's why we're here. That's what's called causeless mercy. Because Prabhupada extended his mercy. We accepted the mercy. So it's not without any action or thought on our own part. So we do have some responsibility, but we accepted the mercy. Like if someone offers you €1 million, you accept it, I hope. If you're so foolish, you reject it. But primarily it's the person offering the money who's the one who's merciful. You're just accepting. So we shouldn't be so interested in past lives. Prabhupada did say something about his past life. He said he was a sinless physician in his past life. But in general, Prabhupada did not get into past lives, nor did he get into astrology that much like devotees now, because it bewilders the mind. Like if you have a horoscope and someone says to you, you're going through your Saturn period right now, then even if it wasn't so bad, it gets bad once they tell it to you. That's called the power of suggestion. And they say, I'm not going to be able to chant nicely now or do any nice devotional service for the next 5 years. Until I go into my Jupiter period. You ever hear that? It's a big excuse to be a rascal. Because the Prabhupada said, when we chant and dance and clap our hands, all the lines on the palm change. And, Krishna changes the horoscope. And we shouldn't get into these mundane things. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur renounced all these things when he became a sannyasi. Or actually when he took initiation, he renounced. He was known as a great astrologer. He was hired by the king of Tripura to be the king's astrologer and advisor. This is before he took sannyas and before he took initiation. That was his job. And he wrote the commentary on the Surya Siddhanta, which is the main astrological text in the Vedic literatures. And so he knew everything about astrology. However, he didn't get into it once he took initiation. That's interesting, isn't it? Whereas we're the opposite. Once we take initiation, get into Krishna Kanta, we really get into astrology. And then we even... We do things, crazy things, according to the horoscope. Let's say you're married to someone and the horoscope says, I see you're going to get a divorce. You're going to have three husbands or three wives or something like that. This is number one, so now it's time for number two. You're not supposed to last for it. It puts this suggestion in your mind. But the devotee doesn't have to function that way. Even if the horoscope is accurate, which generally it isn't, it puts the suggestion in your mind. You say, you're a brahmachari now. I see in the stars, a nice wife and children. I see three children. And then the poor brahmachari's mind gets disturbed. Wife, three children. Then he starts looking at every woman. Are you the one that's meant for me? So better not to get too much into astrology. We should just chant Hare Krishna and be happy, not worry about the... Was it trust no future, however pleasant, that thou neither dwell in the past but live in the present, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. So we don't get into the past or the future. We can make plans to preach or do things for Krishna in the future. Live today. Don't live for the future. Like Prabhupada told the story about that man who was living for the future. He wanted to become very rich. He was a potter. He was making pots. And so what happened is he made a pot and he thought, I'm going to plan, sell this pot, I'll make enough money to make two pots. And then I'll make enough money to make four pots. Then I'll make enough money to make eight pots, two to something power, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, like that. So he was thinking, this is great. I'll become a pot millionaire after a while. And so he was thinking, let me make all this money and become... And then when I make all my money, I'm going to be really powerful. And rich man, everyone will have to listen to me. Even my wife will have to listen to me. And he said, if she doesn't listen to me, what I'll do is just kick her. And as he thought about that, kicking her, He moved his foot and he kicked as if he was kicking his wife, but he kicked that original pot over and broke the pot, and he lost his investment. And he died a poor man. Poor guy, right? So that's what happens when you live in the future too much like that. In the future, I'll be a good devotee. In the future, I'll chant. In the future, I'll have a good sadhana. In the future, what? What else? I'll control my senses. But the future may not even come in this body. You can die. While you're planning out how to do devotional service, you may die and never get a chance to do it. Next life. So any other questions or comments? Yeah. Talk about the, yeah.
From yesterday, last week, that I always thought that he was the father of Kunda Dasa. And so then I actually checked, it's in the old edition.
His brother.
But in the old edition, first edition, which is in Chaitanya, he's actually written as his father, said his father, but in the present edition, which I haven't fully texted.
Yeah, they edited it.
So it looks like
there was an editing mistake, yeah. Yeah, that wasn't from Prabhupada. That was an editing mistake, yeah. That he was... sometimes the people misheard what Prabhupada was saying when they were transcribing. And this happened quite a bit in the early days because it took a while for us to understand Prabhupada's accent, English accent, the English Bengali accent. And Prabhupada spoke with, it took me about 2 months to understand tapes of Prabhupada, be able to hear and understand every word. Now, of course, I can. So he was definitely the brother. There's no question about it. No question about it. But a lot of the details of some of these books are not 100% accurate. And that's what Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur said. Just like I said, the stories, you don't know whether it was Lalita or Vishakha. It happened, but whether it was Lalita, Vishakha, or one thing happened first or another thing happened second, you're not really sure about it. It's like we know the Mahabharata has been changed too. We have to be careful that when we accept things as absolute, they have to be coming down into cyclic succession. Because many of the Puranas have not been passed down into cyclic succession, therefore there's some changes that have been made. And things taken out, things put in, and things inside changed around. So the things that I accept as absolute are things that are coming down in my cyclic succession. The Prabhupada presented to us. Like that, from the Shastras. Otherwise... you can read about this story and that story of the Puranas. We were talking about this yesterday. And some of the things are, you don't know. You can't accept with the same certainty. Or you go to Vrindavan and you hear all these stories that Krishna did this here, Krishna did that there. And you ask people, where did it come from? Well, that's just what I heard. Sometimes you do the Brajmando Parikrama and they tell all the stories. Don't ask them where the story came from because usually they don't know. Sometimes they do. Sometimes it's from the Goswamis, but sometimes it's just they don't know. It's like if you go to Navadweep, they'll tell you that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in Navadweep instead of Mayapur. That controversy is still going on, in spite of the fact that Bhaktivinoda Thakur found the Yogapith in Mayapur. There's still a whole party that says that Lord Chaitanya did not appear in Mayapur. So you'll get confused if you just get everyone's opinion about different things. So any other questions? Yeah.
It was about Jainavidhi. It said that we should accept a very qualified spiritual master because it will help you advance in spiritual life and this work cannot surpass. Of course, the spiritual master, but in this case, we see that with Chaitanya, he had Lord Chaitanya in his heart. And so it's a lila, I understand.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this disciple was also extremely...
Well, it's not that the disciple advanced more than the guru. It's not that a gopi is more advanced than a coward boy. And also it's a pastime, but they're both Nichiren devotees.
But how is it in general,
Well, let's talk about ISKCON. I mean, I think that's a more down to earth question. That all of us are accepting the siksha of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So whoever we're initiated by, I mean, obviously they should be good devotees and Krishna conscious and all that other stuff. But the main source of siksha, the main shelter for everybody is Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So there, it's not that you have to question your spiritual master. How advanced are you? Have you seen Krishna? Sometimes I joke, you test the spiritual master by sticking him with pins to see if he's on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And if he screams in pain, he's on the bodily platform, right? Anyone's done that with their guru? Because if he's not on the bodily platform, you've just committed a maha aparada, and you're going to hell, so it's not a good test. So basically, yes, we should ascertain whether our guru is a servant of Srila Prabhupada. Actually, the quality of bona fide guru is Samitpani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. He must be a servant of his guru, never falling down, always absorbed and repeating the words heard from his spiritual master. In his own language, according to the circumstance, he has to repeat the word. But all of us have the shelter of Srila Prabhupada. So we're not going to become more advanced than Prabhupada. Don't worry about it. It's not going to happen. We just hope to be Prabhupada's servant life after life. That would be nice. So I wouldn't worry about it. And also there's siksha gurus and diksha gurus, and the thing gets a little bit more complicated than one would think at first. Because sometimes the siksha guru, many cases, the siksha guru is much more important than the diksha guru. Like in the case of Baladeva Vidyabhushana, he's connected to the disciplic succession through Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, not through his diksha guru. I mean, the diksha guru does connect him. He is a Vaishnava. I mean, a great Vaishnava, pure Vaishnava. But when we talk about the disciplic succession, we have Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and then Baladeva Vidyabhushana. And also in the case of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was initiated by Vipini Vihari Goswami. And he accepted Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj as his actual guru, who was the siksha guru. So it gets more complicated. That's the point I make. It's more complicated than it appears to be. Who is your guru? Well, you have siksha guru, diksha guru, but the main guru may be siksha guru, as in the case of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So it's quite a complicated thing. So,
but the system is that if you have your spiritual master and you let him have another spiritual elder, that you then ask your spiritual master
for permission. That's the etiquette, yeah. Mm-hmm. For permission, yeah. But then with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, anyway, it's a little more complicated because Bhaktivinoda Thakur accepted Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, but that was not under the instruction of Vipini Vihari Goswami. And Srila Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not accept Vipini Vihari Goswami. He wouldn't even offer obeisances to him. He said, I'm not going to offer obeisances within 50 meters of a sahaja or something like that. And forget the exact distance. And he disagreed with Vipini Vihari Goswami over many different subject matters, particularly whether Brahmanas were superior to Vaishnavas or whatever, born Brahmanas were superior to Vaishnavas. So there's all this interesting stuff going on, So it's hard to apply a specific rule because you find exceptions to rules all the time. Main thing is chant Hare Krishna and accept His Divine Grace to the Prabhupada. the six years of Srila Prabhupada, and whoever our spiritual master, you worship him as a servant of Srila Prabhupada. That's the point. Because it's, you know, Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya, of ISKCON, and he's the source of all our inspiration. Without him, we wouldn't be here. You know, we'd be in the neighborhood bar or something like that, drinking, what's the favorite beer here?
Tupou.
Tupou? Yeah, we'd be drinking Tupou, you know, in the bar. I don't know if I would be. I'd be in America drinking whatever. I wouldn't drink, you know, whatever. But, you know, even those, the funny thing is, even those who are opposed to ISKCON, let's say they're members of different Gaudiya Mass or whatever, who are fighting or trying to hurt ISKCON, they wouldn't be here without Prabhupada. You know, if it wasn't for Prabhupada, there wouldn't be any Krishna consciousness in the Western world. Nothing, zero Krishna consciousness. So we all have to remember, you know, our connection with His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Okay? I know it sounds complicated, but ultimately it's simple. Okay, I guess that's it, because we got to get ready, do our offering, and get ready to leave. So thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhakti Swami Prabhupada, Prabhupada Ki Jai.